We have our Commissioner of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries with us, Chris Blankenship. And also we have Scott Bannon, who is the Director of Marine Resources. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, first question for you is, you know, you've been in the job now for how long? Maybe a year?
Not quite a year.
So since you've taken this position, what has been your biggest challenge that you've faced?
You know, I think there's been several challenges, but really I look at them as, you know, great opportunities. Being the commissioner, really not just wildlife, freshwater fisheries, but the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, you know, we have the state parks is under our department, and the wildlife, freshwater fisheries, marine resources, and state lands. And so in each of those divisions, we have different challenges, and the biggest challenge so far has been learning about our state parks and what all we have to offer, and trying to run a business like the state parks under state government rules. It's a little bit challenging.
I bet it is. You know, the Department of Game and Fish, or Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, mostly depend on, you know, non-tax money. Am I correct?
Yeah, in the department as a whole, we don't take any money from the general fund. We all of our money that supports our activities comes from license sales, or like with the state parks, it's user fees and camping fees, that sort of thing. With the Marine Resources Division, it's license fees and then federal matching funds. So it's very, very important for people to buy those licenses and to really enjoy the outdoor activities that we work so hard in the department to provide.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you know, we have a system here that was developed years ago with a board, an advisory board that listens to the public in public forums, and then has some influence on, you know, what you guys do there, I'm sure. So what my question is how much real influence does that advisory board have on changing game laws, and do you guys listen to recommendations and then look at the science, or how does that process exactly work?
Yeah, the advisory board is very important for what we do in the Department of Conservation. The advisory board is made up of people from at least one person from each of the seven congressional districts in Alabama. And so some of the districts, there's 10 members of the board, so some of the districts actually have two members. And so they come from all different walks of life. You know, some are avid turkey hunters and deer hunters. Some are, you know, fishermen. Some are come from the business world. So really it's a good, broad insight that we get from the advisory board. And they look at the science that we work with and we do here in the Department of Conservation. And we'll make recommendations to the advisory board for seasons and bag limits. But then there's some issues that aren't science-based. They're more social issues that, for instance, hunting with dogs, hunting deer with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of those become very strong user conflict issues, and the advisory board's very helpful in working through those in their district and then also making recommendations on how best to, you know, for the department to open and close areas or seasons or permits, that sort of thing, to make it where everybody has the opportunity to enjoy the outdoors.
Well, Chris, we're going to talk a little bit with you in the second segment, and you and Scott, and focus a little more on marine resources. In this first segment, we really want to kind of focus on wildlife and freshwater fisheries. But before I, you know, get into my next question, I just want to congratulate you guys on the improvements with snapper season coming up. I know y'all have been working your butts off on that, and just a big congrats on that. But, you know, as far as wildlife, freshwater fisheries, and I just saw some game check numbers that came out recently on wild turkey. And so I'm kind of curious about the progression of game check and if there's going to be any changes in terms of data collection. You see how y'all feel about it as a whole. Is it going the way you want it to go?
I would say that, you know, we're happy to have the game check in place. We would like to have better participation, you know, from the hunters in reporting their deer and turkey. That's the only way we can really adequately manage these resources, is if we get, you know, good accurate data. It's a little bit different on snapper check because those snapper have to be reported before they're landed. So if you're at the dock and you have pulled your boat out of the water or you're cleaning fish at a cleaning station, and we can check and see if those, you know, with, if those fish have been reported or not. With deer and turkey, you have 48 hours to report that, so it's a little bit harder from an enforcement standpoint, and we hope that the public will report those and do the right thing since it's you know, mandatory to do that. But we feel like that there's still a certain amount of deer and turkey that are not being reported, and that leads us to believe that, you know, it gives us some pause to really have a good confidence on what the population levels of deer and turkey are in our state.
Do you think there's any plans to change the way the data collection is done? I mean, you know, kind of like what you're saying with the 48-hour rule and whatnot. You know, I could totally understand that somebody could just say, "Oh yeah, I just hadn't got to it yet," you know, when they really didn't intend to do it at all.
Yeah, and I think there's some things that will be discussed at the Conservation Advisory Board on May the 19th. I think that some of the advisory board members have ideas on things that we could do that would help ensure that we get the you know, that the deer and turkey are reported. And I think if you go around the country and hunt in many other states, if you drop a deer off at the processor or the taxidermist, it's a requirement in that state that you have the confirmation number where that deer or turkey was reported. In that state stays with that deer or turkey, you know, when it's in the possession of the processor or the taxidermist all throughout the process. Well, that may be something we can look at here in the state, you know, trying to...
You know. One thing I do want to mention, there's still a law that requires you to write your turkey or your deer down on your license before you move the animal, unless you've changed it recently. That's the way I understand the law.
That's correct. The reporting through the game check system is different than the requirement before you move the deer or turkey. You have to note that on your harvest record.
Yeah.
So before you move it from the field, like, so you need to make sure when you go into the woods to hunt, you got you a pen.
Yeah.
And you can do it on paper, or if you have the app, you know, you can do it on the app and have it done electronically where you can show the conservation officer. But that is a little something that's confusing to the public.
Well, a lot of the places that I'm in the woods, I'm hunting, I don't have a signal on my phone. So by law, I need to write down on my license the date and everything and record that turkey or that deer before I move that animal so that I'm covered. If I run into a game warden on my way to the truck, then I'm in trouble if I don't do that.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, and that's pretty standard in most places that you hunt. I was over in Louisiana this year, and if you shoot a turkey, you got to put a tag on that turkey before you leave the field. And if you're toting that down the road with no tag on it, they're going to write you a ticket. And that's pretty universal, I think, around the country. And so we're not asking our people to do anything that's unusual or out of the ordinary from most hunting.
Yeah. The tagging system works fine where that's implemented, I'm sure. Now, Alabama has very liberal limits on wild turkey and deer. Do you see any changes coming or any indications that might change?
And there'll be some discussion about that at the next advisory board meeting. But I think we do have very liberal seasons on deer. I think we have the most liberal seasons in the country on turkey with a limit of five. I think we're the only state with five. I think there are two states, Texas and another state, with four. Mm-hmm. And then most everybody else is at three turkeys per person per year. So I think there'll be – we're working with Auburn University to do some research on our turkey population in our state. And we won't have that information back for this advisory board meeting, but we'll have it for next year.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to that coming out maybe next year.
Yes, I think that'll be good information for us to really make some decisions on our turkey population.
Yeah, there's lots of theories out there floating around, but nobody knows for sure. We just need to wait on the science to tell us, you know, and hopefully it will tell us something. Now, let's talk about CWD. You know, CWD, the disease that deer get, was found recently in Mississippi. That's really close to us. Right now, it's legal to feed deer at a distance of over 100 yards from where you're hunting, as long as it's out of sight. Do you see any changes coming based on CWD getting closer to Alabama in the baiting laws, because some folks say that baiting encourages deer to feed closer together and pass diseases on.
Yeah, well, as a state, we've been very attuned watching CWD and trying to keep that out of our state, because that is something that can really devastate the deer herd and the deer industry. You know, people that hunt and fish, you know, hunting is about a $1.8 billion industry for our state. And so if we have CWD and it causes such a huge crippling on the deer population, that'd be tough for our state. So we're looking at many things that'll keep that out of our state. And the things that you mentioned, you know, we're definitely are included in our CWD plan, response plan.
Well, good deal.
I hear the music. That means I got to shut up for a minute.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Scott about some fishing issues. We want you to stick around, Chris, and contribute if you can on that too. So we're talking with Chris Blankenship, the commissioner of our Alabama Department of Natural Resources, and also Scott Bannon, who is the director of Marine Resources here in Alabama. Scott, we talked about a little bit about snapper season, but first of all, just go over what the seasons are, both state and federal, this year.
Well, for people fishing from Alabama, the state and federal season is kind of the same thing. The states are going to open their waters to landings, and each of the five Gulf states has a plan. So Alabama's plan is that we've requested about just under 1 million pounds, about 985,000 pounds of fish. And based on our harvest rates, we think we're going to potentially get 47 days. And we're going to do those 47 days beginning June 1st and doing weekends, which are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all the way through to Labor Day Monday. And we're going to include the entire week of 4th of July so that we can try and provide as much access to our anglers as possible. Mm-hmm. But there's always the likelihood that with great weather and great fishing opportunities, we may not make it to Labor Day. We could always close a little bit early. Or if the weather is bad or we have some anomaly during the year, we could open more days if we have not reached that 985,000 pounds. So we're going to work very hard to maximize the access for our anglers this year. So if Alabama waters are open, then you can fish in Alabama waters or federal waters.
Well, that's such a significant improvement over years past. So, again, congrats to you guys. I know you've been working hard on it. And all that data comes through Snapper Check. Is that correct?
It does. Snapper Check is a vital part of this program. We work very hard with the federal government to show that Snapper Check is a good program. It's accountable. It is a good measuring stick for the fish caught in Alabama. So we're encouraging everybody that goes fishing that they meet the mandatory requirement that you report those fish either before they're offloaded from the boat or the boat that has those fish on them leaves the water. And some people look at it as, well, if I report those fish, then I'm going to reach that number, that 985,000 pounds, faster, and the season's going to close sooner. And that's not necessarily true. We have to develop an estimate of what the catch is, and if our reporting rate is low, well, then we're going to err on the side of caution. The better that reporting rate is, the more likely I'm willing to risk every one of those fish that we get to the last day possible and provide as much access as possible. So it's a crucial part of this program.
That's an important point. That's a really good point, and I think I'm glad you said it, because there's a lot of people I think would – in their minds think that, you know, they're going to extend their season by not reporting. In reality, it's the exact opposite. So
it very likely will work the opposite way. And there is another little bit of confusion that we do surveys at the docks. Our staff will be down there during the season and asking a lot of questions about your trip, and that's important to the management of fishing in general. But they're going to weigh fish and measure them, and that is a biological assessment of our stock. But that is not considered reporting your fish. If law enforcement or our biological staff interviews you, you still have to report your fish, either through the Snapper Check app, or if they're at a public access boat launch, they can go to the paper. There's a box with a paper form in there, and they can fill that out and maintain a copy for themselves and leave a copy in the box.
Well, Scott, switching gears a little bit from snapper, and there's two fish that come up a lot in discussion. And those two fish are cobia and flounder. It seems that cobia populations are down anecdotally And the same seems true with flounder. I know there's been a lot of research done right now. Tell us a little bit about the flounder hatchery and also what we're learning about our flounder stocks.
Sure. Right now, I think those two species are of concern to the public and to us. We see the same thing, some reduced landings. With the flounder, we're looking at expanding our program over at the Claude Petit Mariculture Center over in Gulf Shores to include flounder. There's some extra equipment that we need to purchase to make the water temperatures to keep them just right. They're very particular during their breeding season that the water temperature is correct. So we're going to work towards that. We just completed, or we had a study completed that looked at the flounder stock, and so our biologists are having some meetings and discussions on what that information is showing us. And so in the near future, we may have to look at some reduction in bag limits or some kind of season because we need to protect that resource. It's like anything else. We don't want to get on the backside of it and say we woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Anything you can do to improve the flounder population is just fine with me because I love to catch them and I love to eat them.
And even
it's popular amongst everybody. You know, we have our recreational rod and reel guys, our guys that like to go gig, and it's a big enjoyment for a lot of people when they can take their kids out there and spend some time. So it's important to all of us.
Well. So we're running out of time here, Scott. I know we've got so many questions we could ask you. I do want to thank you for being on the show. And again, tell you guys big congrats on all the work that y'all are doing. Y'all do a heck of a job for us down here.
Well, thank you. And we appreciate every opportunity to reach out to the public to try and provide the best and accurate information that we can.